Good Gabs, sponsored by SkillSkin, a nonprofit organization empowering individuals with disabilities through employment. Today, we get to learn about a vision of what we do with waste. What could we do? What can we do in partnerships in this community? And you all been watching for a year and a half. You know what we can do? Big stuff. Today, we have Jess Simpkins, president and founder of Let's Build a Community, and we're going to learn a whole lot more. Jess, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
Well, it's a wild day at the library today. Happy Women's Day. Woo
woo! Yes.
Yep. A whole lot of people up here. Great celebration. And yeah, and I'm excited for today for our conversation. So Jess, what's happening in your world?
Too much, I have to say. But
well, tell us more.
Yeah. So I am not a Spokane native. I'm actually from Sioux Falls, South Dakota.
All right.
So I'm a little ways at home, you know, a little ways from home. But I moved here in June of 2022. And
pretty fresh COVID times.
I moved it to Fresno in 2020, so and then Rhode Island after that, and then Connecticut, and now Spokane. So
well, that begs the question,
I
why
know. That is a long story that I don't know if you want to get all the way into, but
well, I definitely want to know why Spokane.
Okay, well, the short version of that is because my parents moved here in December of 2020. The medium length is that I went to medical school to become a doctor, started out in general surgery out in Fresno, absolutely hated it for a large variety of reasons, switched to psychiatry, which was out in Rhode Island, and after a lot of soul searching was like, this is not the path for me. So
good for you for not just keeping your head down and be like, I'm going to do this no matter what.
It was hard.
I bet.
It was very hard. And especially having $200,000 in student loans from medical school and deciding that this is not the path for me. And it was a lot. But here I am.
Heck yeah.
Yeah.
So what's happening now? What's the path that you're on?
Yes. So back when I lived in a very small town in Connecticut, Norwich, Connecticut, I was kind of reinventing myself. So I am somebody that growing up has been a people pleaser and looked for other people's kind of external validation of what I should be doing with my life. And I kind of credit that with why I went down the path that I did originally.
I know about that.
Yeah. Yeah. But when I got to Norwich, I had an opportunity to be in this co-working space that was run by the Norwich Community Development Corporation. And if you don't know anything about Norwich, because I certainly didn't when I moved there.
I don't.
So they're called the Rose of Connecticut.
And
if you go
fancy.
There, you do not get that vibe at all. Okay. Most people, even that live in Norwich, think of Norwich as an armpit. Okay. It's one of those communities that's pretty economically depressed. Was in its heyday, like very much a thriving economic hub. They had the whaling industry back in the day, which is obviously not a thing anymore, and some manufacturing that kind of, as the world shifted and changed, Norwich became very economically depressed and lost a lot of jobs. And so
they're reinventing themselves.
Yes. So it was kind of the perfect place for me to be, actually. And in particular, so this NCDC that was running this co-working space were these incredible people that saw something that other people didn't, which was the possibility and the opportunities that could be in Norwich that everybody else, you know, looked past and kind of just wanted to forget about Norwich and revitalizing it. But they really saw something special. And so I got to kind of be in this environment where people were coming together and investing a lot of themselves into their community so that they could be proud of it again. And
sounds pretty inspiring.
It was. It definitely was. And so from that, as like you said, I'm reinventing myself and I'm watching this community reinvent themselves. I was just so touched by this concept of like really radical collaboration on a community level and wondered why it's such a struggle sometimes for all these different sectors and industries to come together. And so I founded a nonprofit called Let's Build a Community. first there, just with these seeds of idea of how do we pull together all these businesses and nonprofits and local government, and so that we can be proud of where we live and see where we live as an asset as opposed to something that we're ashamed of.
Yes.
Yeah. So from that, I did end up leaving, right? I came to Spokane in 2022.
Yeah, you're bringing that energy here.
Yep. And I think it's interesting because Spokane, again, is kind of one of those places where, you know, I've recently had a chance to talk to some of the people that were involved in a lot of the revitalization of downtown Spokane several years ago, and how it's kind of depressing to see how things have shifted.
Sure.
With increasing rates of poverty and unaffordable housing and all these things. And I think Spokane is also that community where there's so much value here and there's such rich history, not just in Spokane, but in, you know, Cheney and Medical Lake and Airway Heights and Liberty Lake and all of these different places. But we are kind of lacking in that community pride.
Well, you're catching a vibe, and I think you're at the right spot. Like, this idea of, like, collaboration.
Yeah.
That's what this town does the best.
Okay.
Like, truly, like, there's a theme that we've seen, you know, on this show over the last year and a half of when people want to get big things done, they're generally not doing it on their own. They're not doing it in their own organization.
Right.
It's like they're partnering, and they're partnering well.
Yes.
And so that vision that you were kind of describing, you're seeing, you know, in Connecticut, like, it's here. And so as you start to make those connections, I'm positive.
Yep.
Like,
yep.
And then it's do some big things.
It's been happening. I feel like like you said, kind of the proportion of people here that I'm running into that really care and want to do things and want to collaborate is massive in a way that I haven't experienced in all these places I've lived in the last few years, right? Like, there's some kind of special energy here.
Yeah, there is. You're getting suckered in.
I am. Yep. I was like, I didn't know anything about Spokane before I moved here, right? So I did not
see
myself
here. Some of my hippie
here.
Friends call it the vortex.
I've heard that. Yes.
Yeah, they're when the good stuff happens, and if you're not feeling it, you kind of leave too.
That's right.
So
that's
I always thought that was nice. I just, you know, personally, I'm like, yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Here we go. I'll flow with that. Well, so what's the vision turning into? Right
yes,
now.
Thank you. I ramble a little bit, so I appreciate you bringing me back in. But so one of the things that's been a common thread throughout this process, too, is seeing the value in the things and the people and in ourselves that we've discarded. Because I'm a firm believer in that everything has value, and it's just a matter of how we can kind of uncover that.
Sure.
And so I watched a series of really cool interviews through Business Insider. This was several years ago, but there's a nonprofit in New Orleans called Glass Half Full. I don't know if you've heard of them.
I have not.
Oh, they are awesome. So these two college students from Tulane saw that there was a big problem with glass.
Right. When China stopped taking everything.
2018.
Yeah, and we see the mountain of glass out by the incinerator.
Yes. Yep. Huh. Yep. So they were like, why aren't we doing things with our glass in New Orleans? Like, this is glass is 100% recyclable, which not a lot of people know. And beyond that, there's so many different things you can do with glass, even if you're not going to recycle it in the truest sense, right?
Yeah, a little upcycling.
Yes, upcycling. There's something called beneficial use, which is if you pulverize it, right, you can turn it into sand and gravel and have tons of different great uses there. And that's what they did. That was their model, is they started in their backyard with this little pulverizer, one bottle at a time, crushing their glass. And a big part of what they do now, and they have a huge facility now, but is restore the coastlines in New Orleans with this glass sand that they're creating. So they're literally reversing, you know, these changes that we've caused with trash, right? Which is like so cool.
It's amazing.
Right? So I thought that was fascinating. And it kind of led me to start peeking around in our county and discovered back in May that we don't have an outlet for our glass.
Right.
So like you said, it all goes to the landfill. Not because people want it to go to the landfill, but we don't have any infrastructure locally to manage that. And so until several years ago, it was getting trucked out to Seattle to Strategic Materials, where they would process it and then send it off to different people. But that became really expensive to just truck our heavy glass, right? Yeah. So that fell out, and now we are left with all this glass that, you know, is kind of a pain in the butt because
heavy. Yep. And
takes up a lot of space. So you,
space.
And anytime it's, you know, tipped or dropped onto the floor, where that's when you're thinking about garbage stuff, which I never thought I'd be a garbage person in this world. But
now you know the terms.
I know. I'm so excited. I've like, I'm such a nerd now about this stuff. But it's a hazard to people too, right? And so, for example, the city of Spokane doesn't want it at the waste energy facility because if it goes into their furnaces, then it sticks basically to the inside of their furnaces, and they, you know, can have problems where they have to do extra maintenance on it, and they have to, you know, power down one of their two furnaces until they can get it fixed, which is really expensive. And so that's why they don't want it in the general garbage, right? But there's really no outlet right now for where else it's going.
And so what's the vision?
Yeah,
what are you thinking?
I'm so glad you asked. So I did a ton of research, really looking into the model that they have in New Orleans. There's a company that actually manufactures glass pulverization equipment and is the gold standard for this stuff. And they're out of New York. They're a company called Andela. I've talked with them multiple times about their systems. We really want to look at kind of a multimodal approach with our glass. And so we're starting, even long term, we're going to look at pulverization because, again, it's a great way for us to take this large volume of stuff that we have locally, break it down, and then use it for all different kinds of things, such as you can replace up to 20% of cement.
Which
with
is
it.
Awesome. Uh-huh. So like we're thinking like driveways,
right.
Things like that.
Right. You can use it for landscaping. You can use it like the finest sand kids play boxes because it's totally safe to handle. Right. And like other materials, it doesn't leach anything. It's non-toxic. It's sand.
Sand.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Like where do you think the glass came from?
Yeah,
sand.
We're turning it back.
Exactly. And so there's all these really cool things that you can do.
Do you pulverize it and then have to like tumble it?
No.
It's just the pulverizing works?
So, and this is a great point because I had talked to a few people here locally that had tried some things here previously to pulverize the sand, but you have to use the right equipment.
Makes sense.
And so the equipment that they use at Andela actually is a system of hammers. So it's not like grinding. It's actually hammering the glass.
Cool.
Okay. And so this process, when it does that, is it kind of cubes the edges and it gets rid of the sharp edges. And so what you're left with is a mixture of larger aggregate like gravel and then sand, and you can separate it out by size from there if you attach like a sifter or things like that, and then each of those different sized pieces of sand or gravel can be used for different things. So it's really cool.
Amazing.
Yeah,
amazing tech.
It's
but
very
simple
cool, but
right?
Super simple. And that's the thing, and these guys in Andela, the guy that comes out to set up your equipment for you, his name is Spence. I've talked to him multiple times on the phone. He's just very down to earth. And he runs their glass outlet there because they, in addition to making the equipment for it, they have their own glass outlet, right? Where they're processing glass in New York.
Yeah. Why can't we do that here?
Yes.
We can.
We can. And I've had people ask me that, like, well, why haven't we already done that? It's complicated because it is one of those things where you have all these different entities involved, right? Anytime that you're, anytime you have piles of something, you have the Department of Health involved and the Department of Ecology. In addition to depending on how this all works, but if it's a waste thing now, you have the Department of Transportation involved and different permitting things. And so on that side, there's a lot of regulations that you have to work through. There's the right equipment that you have to use and to be knowledgeable of what equipment is available. And then there's the end markets, like who's going to use
gonna
this
buy it?
And setting that all up. And so it's taken a lot of time. I started this back in May of really like doing a deep dive into this. And now
less than a year. That's not too long, by the way. I love your ambition.
My brain works really fast and I'm just like, you know, I gotta do this. But our long-term vision, and I have a tendency, I hyper-focus a little bit. So I don't want to get lost in the weeds here, because our long-term vision is not just about glass. It's easy for me to talk about glass all day, sure, because I've been in that world, researching it, talking to people about it. But at the end of the day, one, community and collaboration is our top priority over anything else. But two, we would love to see a trash to treasure community center that we have here locally.
I like the name. Tell us about that vision.
So there are so many innovative ways to take waste, which is a very broad term, right? It doesn't even have to be the things that we think of that we're physically throwing away. But to take waste and do something innovative with it that creates value.
Yeah, I've seen like Art Salvage here in Spokane.
Yes, who's fantastic. I volunteered with them when I first moved here. Nice. So I love Katie and Amy and all the people over there. They're fantastic. Where we're different, so Art Salvage, fantastic organization, they take a lot of different art supplies that are like partially used or might have some wear and tear, things like that, that people might throw away because they don't know what to do with a half a pack of crayons or half used paints or things like that, and sort them out and then make them very accessible for local creatives. But there is a lot of things that they don't take that they don't have the capacity to handle.
Right. Cause it's narrowly focused in that.
And they're fantastic. Like when I was there, which I can't wait to see their new location, but when I was there, we would have this constant backlog of stuff to sort through, right? And so they had no shortage of things that they were putting out and selling. And so they had to be and do have to be pretty choosy about what their primary donations are that they're receiving and how that gets out into the community. And so, yes, they are very big into creative reuse, and they do have some things, like they have different challenges where you use materials you maybe wouldn't otherwise use. But there are some things that they just can't take.
And so your vision, if I'm hearing you right, it's like, no, there's a more holistic approach here.
Yes.
And we just have to figure out those outlets.
So it's really a complementary process to what Art Salvage is doing. Also Spokane Zero Waste. They're doing some really cool stuff. And they focus a lot on textile waste right now and food waste. So we're envisioning this actual facility at some point, where we're taking things that a lot of people might see as trash. So whether it's glass, right, that's one of the pieces.
And so that takes material.
It takes material, but they also end up with a lot of scrap.
Okay.
Like broken pieces and things like that. And the wife of this, you know, guy who works there was saying, you know, they have this big pile where they have these broken tiles that they're not going to use. They can't sell. That could be a great source of instead of sending that to the dump, give this to our local creatives that want to do something cool with it.
See what we can do.
Right. Or another thing I've been learning about is coffee chaff.
Yeah. So people are putting it in their gardens, right?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. So when you roast coffee beans, right? When they coffees are berries, coffee beans are berries. And during the roasting process, you have this chaff, or kind of like a
shell.
Exactly. Yeah. That comes off that we don't eat, right? It tastes like crap, so nobody wants it. And there are a few people around the U.S. that are coming up with really creative things of what to do with that instead of throwing it out. Whether that's using it for animal bedding, like in your chicken coop, or for composting, or this one company is turning them into bricks, like briquettes.
Okay.
For your furnace and stuff, like for people that burn wood pellets and stuff as a fuel source. And so that's kind of, I don't know if you're getting the vision.
Absolutely. So this is like an incubator of ideas.
Yes, exactly.
That we can do that maybe can be replicated too in other places.
Exactly. So having this creative, innovative space, it's not just for artists. And that's where we're trying to use the term creatives and innovators, because to be a creative is so much more than just painting or sculpture. You know, people that have ideas and play in ideas are creators.
Absolutely.
And so ideally having a space that has different workshops and almost like residencies to provide people to come in and who have an idea of what they want to do, and we support them in developing that and
connecting them to resources.
Exactly.
Like, because some of the folks that may have an idea, like they're going to need help, like making business plans.
Correct.
They're going to need help. You know, just what do you do with just the the material itself. Where does it go? Where do you store it? Those kind of things.
Yep.
And a partnerships. Lot of, that's what you're going to have to find out.
Exactly.
I keep thinking about the glass too. It's like if the city's got a problem.
Yep.
The, you know, whoever's running that recycling facility, is that Waste Management these days?
The smart center is run by Waste Management.
Yeah, so Waste Management's got a problem. Yep. City's got a problem.
Yep. All these municipalities have this solution. Yep.
You got to connect those dots.
Yes,
right?
And we've started. I think it's, these things always move more slowly than I'd like, right?
I feel you.
Yes, but we're getting there. We are getting there. And to your point, a lot of the connections I've been making have been in the business world, in the entrepreneurial space, which I think is just going to tailor beautifully with what we're doing.
It needs to happen that way. Because anyone who's got those big ideas, they need some of that expertise.
Absolutely. Yes.
And they need some funding sources.
Yep. So I've been really blessed to, just really in the last month, I've been meeting a lot of fantastic people. Michelle Armstrong at SP3 Northwest, Katrina Rogers, who I know is transitioning out of the Evergreen Bioscience Innovation Collective. So there's all these really fantastic organizations that I think have fantastic resources and strengths that will be able to kind of filter in at different points when our innovators need that extra expertise and help.
I can't wait to follow this. Well, Jess, what's driving you? Like, why do you wake up in the morning? It's like, it's obvious your brain doesn't stop turning.
It doesn't.
So it's like, what's behind that?
When I decided to resign from residency, it was really important to me that I spend some time figuring out who I am, what I like, what I want to do. And I'm going to laugh because I recently wrote down WDJW, which is what does Jess want? And I wasn't going to share it with anybody, but I was doing this kind of brainstorming session with one of my friends, and she thought it was hysterical.
Because it's awesome. You're visioning.
She could not stop laughing. Ooh. And she was like, we need to make stickers that say WDJW that you hand out to all of your employees so that anytime they have a question, they can ask themselves, what does Jess want? And she literally just had one made for me.
Oh, that's sweet. That's a good friend.
Yes. She's amazing. She's my 70-year-old bestie and a fantastic woman. But no, I'm not usually a very pretentious person or things like that. But that is, I think at the end of the day, I have to ask myself, what is it that I want to do? Because there's lots of things I could do.
Yep.
But
there's only so much time.
And when I was in residency, I hit this point of not wanting to be around anymore. Like I hit a point so low that I did not want to be here. And that's not something I had struggled with before in my life. I've had a lot of friends and family that have struggled with that. But that was a big wake-up call for me because it was like, you can't keep living this way for other people.
Yeah.
And constantly putting your needs and your desires below everybody else's because you're going to get to this point. Right?
Yeah. Did it sneak up on you?
It did. It was not overnight. It was pretty gradual. But I got so used to not listening to myself, I think, over the years that I would just ignore. I'd have this little voice come up that would say, this isn't really what you want to do. And I would ignore it. And I would say, oh, you're just uncomfortable because of XYZ. And I would really dismiss that inner voice in me that was telling me that that wasn't the right path for me. And so I think it took me getting to that point of really not wanting to be here, that it was like, wow, that's not Jess.
Yeah, I gotta really look at that.
Yeah. So
I was in an event this week. It was amplifying women's voices. And part of that conversation was talking about women not listening to their inner voice.
Ooh, was that on Wednesday night?
It was.
I was signed up to go, but I had a GI bug all week.
Dang.
And I was so bummed I couldn't go.
I did miss out.
I know. Well, I was so looking forward to it, but
I thought it was really impactful because, you know, I'm sitting there, I'm listening, I'm really feeling it too, because I think that may be a human thing too. The Absolutely. Idea of like not listening to themselves. I don't know if men were taught that either.
I don't think so.
I don't think that's talked about.
No.
I don't know. It wasn't talked about like around the campfire for me.
No.
Or or at the dinner table, like that inner voice. It was like, no, you know, put your head down and
work harder.
Work harder. Yes.
Yep.
Are we cousins?
Are you from the Midwest? This is a very Midwest thing, I feel like.
We are from there.
Ah.
Yeah, my grandpa came out of the Dakotas too.
Oh, really?
Yeah, he got real bored out there though. Wow. And he got on a train and headed east, and he said it looked a lot like where I'm from. So he got on another train, like hobo style, and went west and went up and over the mountains.
I love that.
And that's how the Harney family got over here.
Yeah, that's so wild. I love it.
It might have been Bismarck too.
Okay.
Yeah, it's right.
We don't talk about Bismarck.
Oh, yeah. You
know. No, I'm just kidding.
I love that.
Yes.
But yeah, it was just so impactful.
Yeah.
And that idea, it's like that inner self, like we're telling ourselves this for a reason.
Yep.
Like, and the, are you a doctor?
Yes.
Yes.
Technically, yes.
Yeah.
I would be like a general practitioner doctor, like a general practice doctor.
Well, so going through all that, it's like, I'm sure you got to learn a lot about the brain at the time.
Yeah.
And it's just like, we're taking in all this information that we don't really understand.
Yep.
And that's for me, I guess I'm just speaking for myself. Like, that's the inner voice, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like all that stuff that we are not maybe processing right here. And it's telling you for a reason.
I have to say, so when I, right before I started medical school, I joined this meditation group for the first time. And before then, I didn't really understand anything about meditation or mindfulness, which those are big buzzwords now.
Yeah,
and at the time, I was like, I don't know what this is, but I'm going to go check it out, right? Especially in South Dakota. You're like, we're not a big place for lots of cool mindfulness sorts of things. But they are there.
Yeah. I want to see what this is.
Yes. And it was interesting for the first time in my life, I started learning things like I am not my thoughts. Right. Which is like a mind blowing concept. Cause I think growing up in this very cerebral family, and being very driven and academically focused, I very much identified with my thoughts and my brain and all this stuff. And so to start having this concept of I'm not my thoughts, like my thoughts are going to happen whether I want them to or not. And there's some great stats that I do not remember about like how many thoughts that we have in a given day, which is an insane number, right?
Yes.
And that really we collectively are this observer of these experiences that are happening in our life. And that there's this other part of us, if we give it some space and some quiet, that can take in all of these things, that takes in the sensations that we have, right, through our body, that can look at our thoughts, that can look at our emotions, and doesn't see itself simply as those things. And so the more I've kind of gotten in touch with mindfulness practices and meditation and some somatic practices and things like that, the more I realize that all of this running around and busyness and productivity and things that I think a lot of us are conditioned in our society to prioritize over everything else is just noise. And that if we really want to have a life of meaning, right, which looks different for everybody, but that you have to find a way to clear out the noise so that you can listen to that part of you that says, ah, this is what I want to do, or these are the kind of people I want to be around, or, you know, this is how I like to spend my time.
Beautifully said.
Thank you.
You heard it here, everybody. Follow Jess. See where she goes, because I'm sure excited. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much, Steve. This was really awesome.